There's a word in Korean. 2년. It means providence or fate. But it's specifically about relationships between people. I think it comes from Buddhism and reincarnation. It's an 인연. If two strangers even walk by each other in the street and their clothes accidentally brush, because it means there must have been something between them in their past lives. If two people get married, they say it's because there have been 8,000 layers of 인연. Over 8,000 lifetimes.
If I had a heart, 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 I know where to start, I know where to start, I know where to start, I know where to start. If I had a heart, 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 I know where to start, I know where to start, I know where to start.
Couldn't even do. You couldn't do.
No, I couldn't do.
So bad.
I want to be knowledgeable enough to make dumb wrestling jokes, but I'm not.
Why? You have to watch wrestling.
Hi and welcome to the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Damian.
And this is Douglas. At the start of a new year.
We did it.
And we do the same thing at the start of every new year, which is we say, what the fuck is this shit?
Try to take over the world. Oh, sorry.
I just want to talk about all the old shit that happened last year.
Yeah.
you know that shit over there that isn't really helpful anymore?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a while.
Yep. There's some good shit last year. And before we ruin this year, let's reminisce.
Before we get into talking about how the only true existence of this life is to just want to watch whatever the new Jason Statham movie is, let's talk about all the old Jason Statham movies from last year.
All right.
But sadly, he's not in any of our things that we're talking about. And we're going to be doing our end of year wrap up. But unlike the previous last few end of years, we decided to make a small shift in like our formatting of this. While we're still going to be doing categories and talking about our favorites within those categories and ending off with our top 10 list, we're not going to be having the debate on in this recording. We did that beforehand. We thought we'd save you guys the time, the energy, the effort, and instead just roll in here and be like, hey guys, this is all the good shit. All right. And occasionally maybe Douglas will complain about something halfway through. I don't know. We'll find out. That's the wild card that you have to play every year.
Every week.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Harumph.
So yeah. The categories that we've decided on this year is cartoons, which I take umbrage to that name, but sure. It's not TV, meaning the best TV of the year. La Guerta Surprise, motherfuckers, our best surprise of the year. No, you're beautiful. I was giving Douglas time to like do his singing. The MVP of...
I don't sing James Blunt, thank you very much.
of 2023. And eventually, our top 10 films of the year of 2023. So we're going to start out with cartoons, or better yet, qualified anime with a sprinkling of other people's shit.
And the Oscar goes to...
So cartoons, okay.
Cartoons, great. Yeah. That just sounds like cartoon to me.
Anime is not cartoons. All right, it's cartoons. All right, it's cartoons. Who gives a fuck? And... And we've got some incredible things to talk about here. Damien, Yeah. There's football here. How did we get football into anime?
Last year, during the World Cup, which how did that happen again? Who authorized this? Japan is a weird country, and they decided, hey, what if we animeized football? And it is as ridiculous as you think. They've taken real football concepts and added superpowers to them, and it is glorious to watch. It's so fun. And it was so popular that they got the people who designed the Blue Lock anime to design the Japan team shirts, which just made it extra special. Like, the whole thing culminated into lunacy, and there was a, as Andrew puts it, there was a point in time during the World Cup where Japan was being powered by anime and winning matches and teleporting balls that were clearly offside but suspiciously onside to knock out Germany, and it was glorious. All the while you're watching this anime and going, boy, is this how they trained Haaland? Because it feels like this is how they trained Haaland.
I mean, I know the underdog of that tournament was Morocco and all, but I was super hype on, like, we should just let Japan win this at this stage. Like,
genuinely. There's, every year there's teams where you're just like, I know they're not going to, but could we just let them, please? Just this once. Just have a team that everyone likes win. So Japan and then Morocco. The only team I would accept defeat from in the World Cup would have been Japan. Japan deserves it. Let anime win.
Like, I mean, they already did on Olympics and just let all of video games and anime rule the media for like a month at that time. Like, it'd be incredible. But Blue Lock is insane. It's one of those animes where I watched it and it was strange to see something about a thing that you know so much about, where you're like, you're not wrong as they talk about all these concepts, but the superpower shit's just funny.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, anime football.
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. But there's a Ninja Turtles movie here. And Douglas, how was the ninja turtling? Did Shredder do something?
The ninjas did turtle and the turtles did ninja. Yes. So I guess there was some
positive. I have one question for Douglas. Are you super fly? Super duper fly.
This movie is actually a lot more fun and a lot better than you would expect. And we spoke about this on the podcast a couple of times. Damien came on here and whispered about it. I think Andrew did as well. And then I shouted, oh no, he didn't. Okay. But I did shout from every hilltop when I finally watched it. This movie is really fun. At its core, it is what you would expect, which is just a children's movie with silly things happening. But those silly things are just... I still can't get over, and this is the only thing that I spout, so I bet Andrew's like, it can't be that good. But I still can't get over the fact that Jackie Chan is, I was about to say, Splinter. Jackie Chan is Splinter in this in this movie, The Rat.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackie Chan, as Splinter, learns karate or whatever martial arts he uses from watching television. From watching television starring Jackie Chan.
Yes.
And that meta...
Nonsense.
Yeah. It's one of so many things that are... Just make this movie perfect and a joy to watch.
The movie is dipped in 90s nostalgia. To the point where recently I watched a section of the movie where they're playing No Diggity. And genuinely, if they had put that section out as the trailer, I think it would have doubled the amount of money that this movie made. If people just knew what this movie truly was. Because it's a montage of the turtles doing turtles things. And they're playing homage to Old Boy, where there's just a hallway and them kicking ass all the way down this hallway. And it is like the mere fact that the big boss in the movie is called Superfly is further testament to what this movie is. Like, the people who made this movie came of age in the 90s with the first Ninja Turtles and are like, hey, the Ninja Turtles represent the 90s and we're going to modernize the past that we have to modernize, and everything else we're just going to dip in as much 90s nostalgia as we can. And it was so much fun and a very big surprise, because I thought I was done with these Turtles movies.
And they actually released a Turtles game this year, which was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I play it a lot with Noah. He just,
is he
like
better than you?
He just bashes the buttons and says he wants to go to the water, and I'm like, all right. I try to keep him alive. One day he'll be better than me.
Yeah, and that day, I want you to know that we have to keep them from doing that for as long as possible. Douglas, there's this, Bomani has a new podcast, and on there, a caller calls and lets him know that he used to play his grandmother at some boxing game. And one day he accused his grandmother of cheating and swap controllers. And the grandmother proceeded to beat the daylights out of him the same way. And he threw the controller. He tried to throw the controller at the TV, but because it was wired controllers, it fell short. And then on top of losing in the game, he then got a beaten on top of that, and he never played that game again. And that is the type of parents that we have to be under. We have to keep the standard no letting him win. He has to lose and keep taking L's until the day you think he can beat you, then you never play that game again.
I'll let you know what I decide on that front. Okay. But moving on to our winner of the cartoons category, that is the second season, the Shibuya incident of Jujutsu Kaisen. Damian, do you like anime fighting?
Very much so, yes.
Okay, so I've got you 25 episodes of just fights.
Yes. It sounds like someone went to them and said, you know how the first season we kind of explain what this is and who these people are.
There was like some training episodes.
Yeah, and talking. How about for this season, we skip all that. We take the first 5 episodes to explain why the strongest man is the strongest man. And then we take the next 20 episodes to take him out of the picture and then have a free-for-all for every single episode. There are some episodes in this season that are so spectacular. And then you watch the next episode and you're like, I don't know how they're doing this. It doesn't make sense. I thought the last episode was the greatest episode I'd ever seen. And then they've topped it. And then they did that for about 4 episodes back to back. And I lost my mind. Well, I know what wins this category this year.
Is it terrible that as much as, like, I, like you, enjoy an anime fight, especially at the level of animation that these guys did, where they basically tried to murder every animator that they ever hired, which, I mean, I've talked about it before, like, oh my God, Studio MAPPA, can you please stop murdering your animators?
Yes.
Not that, I mean, I've read a lot about the anime industry and how it's generally not hospitable to work in.
Yep.
But the stories like I'm hearing games. About the stories, but you can hear video games pretending to try, where they're like pretending to be like, we're making it better. Anime is not trying to make it better.
Not at all.
Like, like Mappa, like the stories I've heard, like are above and beyond.
Yeah, right. It's real disgusting. It honestly, like when the stories were coming out, it for the first time for a long time, it made me question whether or not I should support this kind of environment. Because, like, you pay for these services and, you know, you watch them. And I was like, boy, this seems like a key time to try piracy. That way you can punish them, but still enjoy the thing.
I don't think that helps. No, that doesn't help. I don't think that would help them. No,
yeah.
I don't think.
It's like, no. Yeah, it doesn't help. What, I mean, I don't
giving
know.
Them, no.
I don't know what kind of outcry we can make in the West to, like, put additional pressures on them because they're so far away, and that culture has shown repeatedly that they do not care what the West thinks about their work culture. But yeah, the stories that were coming out were really awful. And so that really put a like dark cloud over this season. But what I will say is that what those people made under those circumstances, really impressive. Spectacular.
Partially, my brain wants to reward the first five episodes over the whole thing because it's just so like that's the thing I seek in any. I mean, I love the fights and I love the way things come, but those first five episodes with the way the animation is, the way the everything play, like I adore. Yeah. I think I watch it. I watched those five episodes like three times. But yeah.
Yeah, there's an attention to detail that is above and beyond. And, like, there's a scene where a guy goes to this gambling den to race, to bet on boats. And the animation of the boats on a TV, it is done in a way that the second you see it, you're like, they're watching this through a screen on this, and the amount of time and effort that something that is so throwaway, you're just like, someone must have spent a long time to get this looking this right. And it's stuff like that throughout the entire runtime, and it is great.
Cool. Jujutsu Kaisen season 2. Thank you for being the best cartoon. But moving down our categories, it's not TV, or what I'd like to call the best TV of 2023. Somehow,
so just to be clear, Jujutsu Kaisen was our number one cartoon.
It was our number one cartoon. Right.
Is there a late writing from one Douglas Robinson?
No. I just felt that perhaps we could actually say that a little bit.
Understood. Understood. Thank you for letting me know that I was not clear. I was trying.
I feel like
it's
we're just talking about the three, and then we're just like, well, that's the best. Let's move on.
I feel like I'm going to do that a couple of times, so thanks for pointing it out. It's not TV, or the best TV of 2023, which surprisingly here has more than three items here. So we have to figure out what's going on here.
Yeah.
We have The Last of Us, Damien.
Yes.
I thought this was a video game.
It was. And then someone smartly said, you know, Damon was so enthusiastic about The Last of Us 2 a couple of years ago, so much that he brought it up as his number one movie of the year. it's not a movie, it was a video. And they're like, maybe we should look into this. And they did. And what they found was one of the best stories that has been told in media, any media, for a good long time. And so HBO gave them a blank check. They gave them Pedro Pascal and said, hey, go make everyone uncomfortable. And for 5 out of the 6 episodes, he did that. But in the middle of those 6 episodes, there were gay rednecks. And that made everyone real sad. Real sad. And then everyone was like, oh, nothing good is going to happen in this show. This show is just going to be bad all the time. This show is designed to set up everyone to feel like there is light and then to extinguish all of the light. And what I have to say to those people is, season 2 is coming. So y'all better get ready. They say it's only darkest before the dawn. The Last of Us does not agree with that statement. They only believe in the darkness. The Last of Us is on here. It did not win, despite my protest. I want everyone to know it should be number one, but I've been voted down by two idiots. But these two idiots are my co-host, and I love them. And so I've allowed them to be wrong for yet another year. Speaking of things that aren't as good as The Last of Us, Poker Face. Andrew Robinson, do you love Poker Face?
So do you guys remember when we were young little children and we would sit in front of the television and Murder, She Wrote would come on? Mm-hmm. And you'd just be like enamored for like 60 minutes that they solved a crime and everything was done. Mm-hmm. And no one ever does that anymore. And someone said, what if I did that, but like up the budget and had Natasha Lyonne as like the lead and big stars show up in every episode, like Sia Colombo. And we have my boy Rian Johnson be at the back of everything. And it was a delight from end to end. From every episode, in and out, you're just like, all of these stories, all of these characters just popping up, just having a time, and just nostalgic for all of the old murder mysteries that I'd watch, and all of the procedural television we could talk about. I remember there was a time, like 6-7 years ago, we'd be talking about TV shows like Burn Notice, right? And just the nonsense of procedural television.
Andrew, I have bad news for you.
Damon, I'm not asking you. That wasn't a call for a response.
Okay. All right, sorry.
Go back to your hole, you little goblin.
Apologies.
But yeah, Poker Face is capital F fun. Right?
Burn Notice, a 2007 drama.
It lasted 20 years.
It lasted 7 seasons.
So it finished 6 years ago. But Poker Face is amazing. I agree with Andrew. Poker Face should be number one, should be our winner. But apparently I too, like my co-hosts, have been bamboozled, mm-hmm. hoodwinked into not having this show be number one. And you know, you mentioned Colombo, Andrew, and I love that this show, similar to Colombo, has their lead character, their lead detective, have their own catchphrase. Like with Colombo, it was one more thing, right? Mm-hmm. with Natasha Lyonne, of course, her just what's the word? Her sweet little catchphrase is simply bullshit. Mm-hmm. She says that all the time because that is how she knows whether she is right or wrong on a case. She detects bullshit, and I love it.
Yes.
I love how they just make it magical. They're just like, she just knows, right? They're like, we're not even going to pretend like we wrote things into this, so like Sherlock would be like, but the curvature of the earth was 1 degree more earth, so it means mm-hmm. that. No. Bullshit. Right. Just done.
She's just like, that is, you guys, horseshit. Before we move on, the 7th and final season of the American spy television drama Burn Notice aired from June to September 2013. It ended 10 years ago.
So 7 years ago. Get your math straight, Damien.
Yep.
I was just talking about Burn Notice last night to some people. I'm like,
it's a decade. It ended.
Show a lot,
yeah, but it ended a decade ago. Speaking of things that have ended, Douglas Robinson, tell me how great the great is.
Damian White.
Yes.
I am distraught at the ending of this television show. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing about this TV show, though, is that clearly...
Do they still say huzzah?
Yes, they do.
Are they still saying huzzah all the time? Okay,
yes.
Cool.
It's still the best. It's still the absolute still the best.
It's still the greatest.
I think it might be the only thing better than The Last of Us.
But this show is hilarious. But anyway, I am distraught. But the interesting thing about this show and why you feel bad, but also you feel like you've gotten everything, is that clearly the creators were always nervous. Every year they looked at it and they're like, seriously? You're letting me do another season? All right, but I guess I can't be certain about next year, because at the end of every season, I felt like it felt self-contained. It felt like, you know what? If it ended here, this is the end of the show. It's fine.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Even the last ending, when apparently they didn't expect it, felt like the end of something. And so at least from that perspective, we're not left with, I mean, we want more, but we're not left with thinking there should be more, there could be more. How does this end like this? At least there is that. But this show is amazing. And I intentionally use the present tense because I am now launching a GoFundMe. I am launching a petition for some other streaming company. Netflix, hey, Steve, right. Come on.
Steve,
maybe Yahoo will pick it up for its, maybe Yahoo for its will next pick season. It up.
Listen, yes. Amazon, not known for do it for their money.
Jeff Prime, let's do this. Let's... But yeah, this show is
it's Bezos Prime. Get it right.
Bezos Prime. and you know, it really what's her name? The sister, the one that plays Catherine the Great, is really great in this show, and it has a cast of characters. Elle Fanning plays the lead, and it has a cast of characters that just support her and create an environment for equal amounts of scene chewing from everyone, right? Like, usually in a show or in anything, there's one person that is assigned the chewing of scenes, but this show, it just has it from everybody. Everybody is at their top end of their work, and it's amazing. This show is hilarious, and I hope that I get more things like this. I kind of hope I get more things from these people, but we'll see how that goes. Fingers crossed. But nonetheless, this was definitely one of the greatest shows for a little while, but also more specifically, 2023.
But I think somehow, looking at this list, we have one greater show from 2023, and that is our winner for Cocaine It's Not Bear. TV, The Bear.
Oh, different shows.
No, Cocaine Bear, that's a whole different category.
I mean, is it though? I'm pretty sure there's a lot of cocaine.
Is it though? In the show. Is it?
I mean, if it was the Bourdain series, maybe, you know?
I just finished watching an episode where they fed children drugs. So, are you sure?
And a post phantom shot. Andrew, you're a monster.
Damon, did you just say postpartum?
I think so.
All right, cool.
All right, cool. So The Bear.
I think I'm wrong.
The Bear is... Yeah. The latest season of the TV show starring the dude from...
Jeremy something.
Jeremy Allen White, I think his name
is. There we go. Yes, that's his name.
Yes. Thank you for helping me halfway along the way, because I'm like trying to remember the Shameless show. I'm trying to remember his character name in Shameless.
Son number one.
Son number whatever.
Yeah.
is a show
that's probably still going, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's, I think I spoke about the show when it ended and it came, I came on a podcast. Like, I remember when the first season happened, I was enamored. Like, many people were, like, I was just into the vibe of the show. This season just went above and beyond, right? Like, it's the closest I've come to understanding team building, like in real life. Like, the way we talk, the way people try to talk about it. And seeing it actually in action and falling in love with how they break every episode apart to focus on each individual character. And then, of course, come back to the lunacy. People like to talk about season one, about the one-shot episode. Mm-hmm. I think it's episode 8 or episode 9, yeah. Where it's like the crazy... I like to call it the Uber episode, where like they turn on the orders and like the everything goes insane. But somehow this season topped that with the Christmas episode, where they go back in time to the family Christmas dinner. And like, I feel like that's the most anxiety-inducing television I've ever seen. to allow myself to be a little hyperbolic for a moment. Like, everything about this show is just perfection. And I adore it so much. Like, on its own, this season alone, like, it's me just wanting to be like, it's better than 99% of television I'd watch in general. And I think my favorite episode this season had to be the episode with the shitty cousin going to the restaurant as a waiter. I've forgotten the title. I think it's called Mushrooms or something, because he peels mushrooms in the episode. No, it's called Spoons. The episode is called Spoons because it starts with this whole story about him working on the spoons. And, you know, it's one of those moments where you can think about all of those people in your life who you try to be like, I want to show you how much I love this thing and how great this thing I love can be and how much you will love it if you finally start to look at it the right way. And seeing his perspective shift from being like, oh, fuck, this is just nonsense, to like, oh, I get it. And seeing that happen, like, it's incredible. I love this fucking show. I don't even know if I want a season 3. Like, I just want to hold this thing as a warm thing and keep it like this forever. Is the kind of show it is. It's not necessarily that I don't want them to do more, but, like, that's the way I think about this show. Yeah, the bear. Damon is cackling at the bear. He's like, the bear is not. He's like, the bear is not a real show.
No, all right, listen. The bear is very good. I love the bear. It should be second place on this list.
Yeah, to the
but
great.
I don't have, listen, I don't have anything, there's no clapbacks for the bear. It's perfect TV. What am I supposed to come out here and say? Oh, you guys are wrong because...
You're supposed to say that uh-huh. Don't you know you're not supposed to
uh-huh.
put potato chips on omelets. Like, that's
sure.
The thing you're supposed
yes, to. But unless you've watched the bear, no one will understand what you're talking about.
Follow it up with watching The Menu, just being like completely upset at all cooking things. Just like watch
I was
The Menu.
So upset at that movie.
Still haven't.
So upset. I need to watch it again.
Douglas's anger.
I don't know what it's about.
Douglas's anger was just like, it can't. This is not. I don't need to spend time to get to this because it's not top 10. And since no one, not to spoilers for the top 10, The Menu did not crack anywhere near the top 10.
It was last year's though.
Yeah.
Oh, it was last. All right, never mind.
And yeah, it was like, I think Andrew tried to put it on, but neither of us had watched it.
And we were
no, it was on the top 10, actually.
I think it was yes, the one that I squeaked in
10,
to be like,
me and Damien didn't watch it. And then Damien came back and said, boy, if I had watched that, it would have been like number two or something like that. And so I said, all right, I'll watch it. And I saw it fairly recently, within a few months.
Yeah, you thought about it.
Yeah.
You did not.
Not that I didn't like it. I mean, I kind of didn't. But it was more that I was expecting food porn as opposed to...
murder porn.
Whatever that was.
Go watch it again.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on down our list, we've got to the surprise, the greatest surprise of the year award, the LaGuerta surprise, motherfuckers. I can't do, I don't have the energy to do it. Douglas?
I feel like there's something we've forgotten to talk about. I feel like perhaps there is a contender of the television award.
Is there a late writing that we've ignored? Is there a late writing?
Yes, because I feel like I need to raise this point.
Andrew, you can mute him now. And we can move on to the other.
So this is where I'm going to insert the one clip that I see on TikTok or whatever all the time, where it's him going, no fighting, no fighting, no fighting, no fucking fighting.
Yeah. Right. You don't.
I still haven't blinders. Seen that scene yet. But
yeah, there is a television show that myself and Damien have
talked about every year for 6 years.
Yes, yes. You can now say your goodbyes.
Extremely loud about how good this television show is. Mm-hmm. Andrew apparently has been lying to us. Mm-hmm. Andrew this whole time has said to us, I do not watch that show. Then he started watching and said, I do not like that show. And I, Damien, I have gotten some insider information.
Right, you have it on good authority.
I have it on good authority.
Don't reveal sources.
Oh, no, I can't. I cannot reveal my sources.
Right.
But a little birdie tells me that Andrew adores this television show.
Yeah, it's because, you see, Andrew has eyes and his brain works.
So
of course.
I will not admit nor deny anything that is being proclaimed on this podcast.
You plead the fifth.
However, I will negotiate a exchange of admissions as soon as I hear talk about Almost Famous from somebody on this podcast.
Sure, I will talk about Almost Famous.
No. And it needs to be in a positive light.
I mean, I am positive that I don't like Almost Famous.
Thank you very much, Damien. I too am very positive about that fact.
If you would like to accept us changing the title of It's Not TV to the Peaky Blinders Invitational, that can be negotiated.
So is next year the Expanse Invitational, and is it just alternating each year as to?
Well, here's the thing, right? I'll have to make sure that I get my information from my sources, so that hopefully we can speak positively about the Expanse next year.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Stay on your sources, Douglas. Don't reveal it. See if they can be gently nudged in the direction of expansion. Expansionism is what we're doing in 2024. Expanding all horizons.
Our
minds.
I think that will be a miracle. An award for now finally releasing all seasons of The Expanse on physical media, which is on its way to my house as we speak. So I have an early 2024 Expanse.
You got a late Christmas present.
Yes, I did.
From Bezos Prime.
What's hard? What's hard, Mom? What is it? I make things beautiful for them. And no one makes things beautiful for me. Okay. Look, I'm gonna sit down now. Why don't you give me your hand?
No,
go sit.
No,
go sit.
Okay.
Come on, Mom. Come on.
I'll go in a minute.
All right, well, I'll just wait. I'll
wait
for you.
Okay, Michael. I'll be there in a minute. I said go.
Okay.
I said...
Are you good?
Go. I'm good. Go. Go sit. I'll just wait with you. I'll wait. Why are you treating me like a child?
No, I'm not treating you like a child, Mom. I'm not.
Do we have a problem?
Do we have a problem?
Do we have a problem?
Speaking of incredible surprises, Blue Beetle.
Blue Beetle.
George Lopez is in a movie, and I did not hate that movie.
You remember the DC movies? Did you think you'd like a DC movie for a while?
I'm not sure what that is. Denon and Geddes, I'm not sure. What? Who? Who is this? Who is this?
That is quite a way to spell the word Geddes, I have yes. to say.
With a C.
With a C. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it like a hard C?
The C is silent. Is it C?
So yeah, Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
Not
bad. Not bad at all. Weird. Did not expect that. Because the movie they poured zillions of dollars into and had better actors in. Real bad.
That Flash is this movie. What, Aquaman? Hey, oh no, hey, Flash. Hey. Okay.
So the Aquaman not, movie is fine. I will not hear is all your negative
things about the Flash.
The Aquaman movie is fine. I saw it at Caribe. It is in the Did third you see dimension. It in 3D? Oh, yeah, it was god awful in the third dimension. But the movie is fine. Like the first one, it is fine. It is not the Flash. Which the first time I saw the Flash, Douglas, I was like, this movie. It's fine. Ezra's Ezra. It is fine. And then everyone in the world said, this movie is bad. And then I was like, I don't think the movie is that bad. Let me watch it again. And that was my mistake. That's the mistake I made. I watched it again. And the only thing good about that movie is that it ends. It ends. I retract my Supergirl claim. She was in it for 3 seconds. Like old-ass Batman. Old-ass Batman is in it for 3 seconds. It does not do anything to help.
Old-ass Batman at least gets a couple moments. I never understood. Well, after watching the movie, mm-hmm. I don't understand people getting so excited about Supergirl.
Because she seemed like the one thing they could build on. And no, there's nothing to build on. That is why everyone has agreed we're going to give it to James Gunn and cross our fingers, toes, and everything else. Mm-hmm. And pray to God that he puts out a good movie. It turns out that if you keep cranking out garbage, people get tired of your garbage.
But talking about cranking out stuff, there was a Blue Beetle movie.
Yes.
Yes, there was. And George Lopez is in it. That's nominated yes. here.
George Lopez is in it. And it is okay. And that is a miracle because there's George also the Lopez dude from
Acapulco.
No, you're there's not also listening the dude from Acapulco. George Lopez is in a movie and I did not hate that movie. Mm. That is like telling me Tyler Perry is in a movie and I did not hate that movie. The Venn diagram of me and liking movies. George Lopez is outside of all of the... It is outside the Venn diagram. So far. It is.
The Blue Beetle is extremely fun.
Yeah.
I mean, and...
It is weird. It is hornier than I thought they would allow any of those movies to be. Which was exciting. All right. I was like, hey. Since there's a love interest, let's just do the thing. Yeah. And it was fun.
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah. A true surprise.
Most definitely.
But you know what? Looks like it could be a slightly, but not necessarily that much more of a surprise because they're not necessarily ranked. Is if I were to ask Douglas about Dungeons and Dragons. Because I know this year was like a year for D&D because everybody fell in love with Baldur's Gate.
Oh, did they?
Right?
Yes.
I myself included. But they also made a D&D movie with the most handsome, charismatic man ever, Chris Pine.
Is he the best Chris?
He's in the running, right? I mean, I have a vote for other Chris's.
Hemsworth but, is...
No, Hemsworth but, can't act.
But Pine is... Pine is probably the correct choice.
Yeah.
Right. But anyways, Douglas Dungeons.
It can't be Super Mario. It can't be him.
No.
He's talking to dinosaurs, both in the Mario movie and in his real life movies.
Damien, to be fair,
yeah.
Hemsworth gets very upset when things become loud. So, I mean, Hemsworth is...
That is true.
All right.
And he was in a Ghostbusters movies where he put on glasses.
Man.
He's going to be in a new Mad Max movie this year.
All right, never mind.
I like Hemsworth. I mean...
No, I still choose Pine.
Rubbish,
I think Pine is probably the most correct decision.
I choose Pine.
At the moment.
But yes, speaking of Chris Pine, speaking of surprises, Dungeons & Dragons was miles better than it deserved to be. Mm-hmm. Dungeons and, hands up who watched the 2000s, the early 2000s Dungeons & Dragons
movie. I mean, you can't see my hands, but yes.
And that's all of us. I remember watching that movie. Actually, it came out...
Or was on HBO.
I watched it while I was on my way to look at colleges. I literally was on an Air Jamaica flight, and it was the movie that was playing on the flight. And back then, you know, you didn't have fancy things like tablets and earphones attached to them and watch whatever you want.
There was they like rolled around and they were like, "Would you like to buy a headset?"
Exactly. And they didn't even have the Netflixified menu that you could choose from on American Airlines. They were just like, this is the movie we're playing for the next 4 hours. Enjoy! And that movie was bad, as it deserved to be. I'm sure we all also grew up on the cartoon Dungeons & Dragons, that children's show, which I remember enjoying simply because it was a cartoon and I was... much too young to know that all cartoons aren't good. But this movie, the story is non-existent, but that's not what you come here for. The charisma that Pine shows on the screen, the jokes, the way that it's written, the people behind this movie knew. They're like, listen, we know this is rubbish. Let's play into that. Let's just wink at the camera and say, you know what? We know what's happening. You know what's happening. We're going to enjoy ourselves 100% of the time. And that is how I felt while I was watching this movie. There were so many things that didn't make sense. They contradicted themselves so many times. They did silly, quasi-action, but mostly comedic things. And... I honestly have not a bad word to say about this movie.
I second everything Douglas says. This movie is... It is better than it has any right to be. This is what I'll say. The trailers look horrendous and the movie is better than the trailer. And that rarely happens. But speaking of things that rarely happens... I'm going to tell you a tale of something that has never happened before.
Do I get to tap the sign again?
Sure.
Don't make anime real. Please stop.
Sure.
Stop making anime real. Let it be anime.
Yeah. So, like video game movies, something else bears a horrendous track record. It is anime to Western real life. Transitions. I had no hopes for this. Like, saw the trailer, yet this never happens. All these anime to Western movies or TV shows are always bad. The best one that we had was Cowboy Bebop, and one episode was like shot for shot, and then the rest of it was lesser than, and the more the episodes continued, the lesser than it became. And that was the high watermark. There's others like Dragon Ball Z, which is still, to this day, it's psychotic that that is what they translated it to. And so the trailer for One Piece came out and everyone was like, this is going to be bad because they're all bad. And then the internet was like, I think this One Piece might be not so bad. And I was like, I don't like the anime. And people seem to like this. Let me give it a try because I don't have anything to, you know, compare it to. So I'm like the best possible person to give this a shot. And then I watched it and it was good. And I was like, well, clearly I'm wrong. This is anime. Like, it can't be good. I've seen this before. Like Avatar, The Last Airbender got $300 million. And that was a catastrophe. And that was so easy to get right. And yet everyone got every part of it wrong. So One Piece can be, and so I watched it a second time and still liked it and started becoming very concerned because it meant that it might be not bad, and there was no room for this to be anything other than we had a spot in the worst TV and worst movie dusted off and prepared for One Piece. It was there from the announcement, and we're like, well, it was just going to sit here until it actually comes out. And the spot remains vacant, and that is a miracle because, oh my gosh, One Piece is not bad. Madness.
Is that spot now held by Yu Yu Hakusho?
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I watched it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't hate it, but still, mm-hmm. you know, it's
yeah.
not...
We don't need it, yeah.
You know, we don't need it. It's just kind of hanging around there, and you're like, I'm still there being like, guys, I want my things to look nicer. Mm. I want my animation to be animation. And I'll continue as we talk about One Piece, just to go back and watch the Gear 5 fight and see all of that lunacy.
So, right. Andrew was like, hey, Damon, I know you're not going to watch 4,000 episodes of this nonsense, but there's some Looney Tunes lunacy happening in season 900 and something million. And I watched 3 episodes and they looked absolutely spectacular. But I have very little understanding of what is taking place or why it is taking place or who is winning or how they're winning. But for 3 episodes, I was back amongst the One Piece. And then I was able to escape with my life. And I'm very grateful. Because once One Piece takes a hold of you, there are thousands of episodes. It feels and like, your life is over.
It feels like 2023 was like the year of One Piece. Because like they had the Netflix series. Yeah. They had this whole upsurgence of all the Gear 5 stuff in the anime.
Yeah.
And it felt like One Piece was everywhere. It was even at like a Rams game.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. People doing shenanigans.
And which one was it? It wasn't Dortmund, but it was a fairly... Was it Hoffenheim in in the Bundesliga?
Yeah, they just took over.
All the way across the crowd?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's what you see, One Piece fans. Can we call them fans? Lunatics? Who cares? They're crazy people. Because they've watched 1,000 episodes of a TV show. So, by definition, they're crazy people. And you have to be very wary of them. Put it this way.
Those 1,000 episodes started before this podcast.
Yes. It would have had to. Andrew, since we started this podcast, let's say there's... roughly, what's that, 750 weeks since we started this podcast. If they didn't miss a week, it would take them 20 years. It's been more than 20 years. It is psychotic.
I think what I find the most incredible, because I remember when that show started and I was very much watching it at that stage, and I've recently gone back and like watched the beginning of it, I find it fascinating to see what that show looked like on episode one mm-hmm. and what it looks like today.
Yeah.
Like seeing what they did in those mm-hmm. episodes. But anyways, I will stop talking about the anime and we can continue to tell Netflix that they did a good job.
Yes. I'm excited for season two, and I didn't think I would think that about any version of One Piece.
100%. I remember when I started to get a sniff from the internet, and I came here onto this podcast one day, and I was like, "Boy, guys, what's going on? Because the internet keeps telling me that One Piece is good. It can't be, right?" And I remember Damian whispered into the microphone and said, "Boy, Douglas, I think I like it." And I said, "What?" And that's when I watched it. And this is the show.
I'm going to be very curious to see what the second season looks like, because they're going to get into some more fantastical characters that you've ever even seen.
Yeah. Some doctor like, lady is going to be in it, and it's going to be Jamie Lee Curtis, because she got very upset that she wasn't in the first season.
So the doctor of the crew, Douglas, is a tiny reindeer by the name of Chopper. Like it's a humanoid reindeer who his thing is like he eats like a berry thing and then becomes like a massive reindeer in a fight. Mm-hmm. But he's like a tiny, tiny reindeer thing. And I'm like, oh, I want to see how that CG is going to look.
I think they might just make that person a person.
Yeah.
Just skip it. They're just like, listen.
There's a member of a crew that's just a skeleton.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll get to him in the second season, but I'm like
that they might do. But I think like miniature reindeer, just like this. That's we're asking too far. Much at this point. Yeah, let's move on.
So yeah, this is always where my brain goes to when I see the. But I guess that's probably the same thought that a lot of people had when Marvel was making movies. Where they're like, how are they going to make Tony Stark look like Iron Man? Like,
yeah.
Now we're like, we know. So,
yeah, just make them people.
Yeah. So, yeah, our biggest surprise for 2023, that's surprise, One Piece surprise. Netflix's adaptation and follow-ups, Blue Beetle and Dungeons & Dragons.
I told you to get the hell out of here.
You did.
Then leave. You don't know anything about what's going on here.
I don't.
Typically, every year we hand out our MVP, or as I'd like to say, No, You're Beautiful, in honor of our first MVP that we gave out to one Mr. Jonathan Wick, that is Keanu Reeves. Our MVP for 2023, we have three nominees here, and our runners-up are, Douglas, I'm going to ask you to start this out here.
Most certainly. You know, before Andrew says to all of these categories, they're in no particular order. I'm pretty sure this one is in a particular
order. No. Right, this is me just being like, I don't want to be the one to butcher these names.
No, I know. But I can say, and I'll say why. So starting at the end, at the bottom of the list, is Sasha Dhawan, who myself and Damian know a lot more fondly as Orlo from The Great. And Yvonne Rion, who the whole world knows as the bastard Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones in a television show called Wolf.
Is it sad that when you say the bastard there, my brain goes to Inglourious Bastards and I'm like, but they're all bastards. Which one?
Yes. And why I say this is at the bottom is because I Douglas Robinson, I'm the only person that have that has watched this television show of the three of us and have any context as to why these two are great together. Damian may intuit because he knows half of the equation and says, you know what, the great was great, Orlo was great, therefore there may be some greatness, some great adjacent work happening here. But I can tell you, these two were amazing in that show. They played two criminals who burst upon the scene. They enter pretending to be police officers, helping this family. And slowly but surely, you realize these two are a little more sinister than that, aren't they? And they get up to some serious shenanigans. And it's... while this is not a comedy, these two are hilarious. They were given a job and they succeeded at that job. But with that said, this is the second runner-up.
Thank you. I have no comment because I have no idea. I know you've spoken about this show, but I've not actually watched it, and it's a British, so why would I watch it? Like, it's just another one of these, right? They solve crimes in it, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Okay, cool. Does it rain in the background?
Possibly, and it is also based on a book, so you've got the trifecta right there, the London trifecta.
No idea. So continuing down this list, there was a film that came out on Netflix late in the year that was The Reptile, and we wanted to nominate the star producer, somewhat writer, I believe, Benicio del Toro, for his involvement. Damien, you, sir, are a fan of Benicio.
Yes, and I continue to be a fan, even when he has wrapped himself in garbage. Reptile is a terrible movie. But Benicio is peak Benicio. He's so good in every single scene. If you aren't paying attention, you might be tricked into thinking that there's a movie here. There is no movie here. But Benicio, he worked hard for his money this time. They owe him a lot more money because the only thing holding this frail shell of a screenplay together is Benicio's gravitas. And it is in full bloom in this movie. and so that's why he deserves it.
Yes, you know that you are at least in the running for an MVP when you single-handedly take a work like this on your shoulder and say, you know what? I know this is a bad movie, but I'll make you think it might not be that bad. That's how good Benicio was in this film. He was chewing scenery like nobody's business.
Benicio, he definitely stood out from a movie that had no one standing, everyone else sitting down. Benicio's just chilling out there, just doing his thing. We always love someone who chews scenery, and I think that's going to prove true as we continue into our winner of this list. But Reptile was one of those disappointments of the year that, like, I can't figure out why it was that terrible. It's like, you recognize some people just don't try hard enough. but yeah, there's that. But there's a TV show that we are very much into on this podcast. Like, I feel like it's the TV show that precursed any expanding or blinding of peaks, any of those things. Like, it's a TV show that somehow, in my mind, defined this podcast, and that had to be justified. And when that show came back, to be Justified Detroit. I've forgotten the proper subtitle for the new...
The Flaming Inferno or something like that?
In which cowboy man Raylan Givens returns. He sadly had to say goodbye to his old foil and say hello to a new one. That being Boyd Holbrook, played by Clement Mansell. The other way around. I'm reading names bad because... Yep. Because I don't know how we wrote these things. Clement Mansell, played by Boyd Holbrook. Mm-hmm. And I always think of him as the guy from Logan. I don't know why. But, oh my goodness, he looked at Justified and he said, I can do that. And he did something. Damien, you are our cowboy expert.
Yes.
I'll take Is that this title. Show still a Western?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much so. Raylan has a daughter. The daughter is insubordinate. And and like this show feels like more Justified. And that's all I wanted from it. Like, it doesn't feel like it's just pushing it into some new direction or raising a bar or anything. Like, someone said, hey, Justified has been off the air for a decade. How about we put it back on and just continue? Because people love it and we like money. And they were like, all right, fine. But we need a new Boyd Crowder. And they found one. And that must have taken a long time to cast this properly, because I did not see this happening. I thought they would just have, like, every week he just find someone else to like, it would just become like NCIS but with Raylan. And they're like, no, we're sticking to the rules. We know what people like. We have one main bad guy that he has to chase, but we have to make this bad guy super crazy, super fun. Like, you know you're not supposed to root for him, but you feel the need to root for him because he's pure chaos. And they found it, and I'm very happy that the show is able to continue and find a newer replacement for Boyd Crowder. And the show, like, it's more Justified. If you like Justified, then this is a no-brainer. And I don't think as someone who, when more Lord of the Rings was coming out, I gave it that pass and was like, listen, don't care if people don't think these are special, it's more Lord of the Rings, who cares? It turns out I was wrong. I don't think I'll have regrets with more Justified. I think I'll be fine.
Any words from you, Douglas? Do you have any thoughts to hand off to Boyd?
I think that we've said quite a bit. We've praised this fella quite a lot. And rightly so. He, we talk about chewing scenery. He does quite a bit of that. He is amazing in this show. And you mentioned the actor Boyd Holbrook being in Logan. I don't even remember that. How I know him, where I think of him, is the nightmare in the dream show, Sandman. And so, and that is another show in which he shines. And he shines here. The question, I guess, is, and this is an interesting one, who would you rate as number one baddie? Is number one baddie Clement Mansell, or is number one baddie Boyd Crowder?
You're talking about like Justified canon, or are we talking about like...
No, just like, you know, the the character, the forget about canon or whatever you want to call it. Just like, who did you enjoy more? Did you enjoy Boyd Crowder? I know we clearly got a whole lot more of Boyd Crowder.
I think it's always going to be Boyd Crowder, if and only because of the frenemy nature of it, where you're like, that one can go forever of being back and forth, of being like, I won't kill you, because at the end of the day, we did coal together.
Right, he was like, his Batman, like, his Joker to Raylan's Batman. This guy, while charismatic, there'll be no...
He's Wile E. Coyote. Yeah. He's Wile E. Coyote. Like, he's gonna get got.
He's here to be murdered. And it's just fun to see how he keeps evading the murderation that is coming to him.
He fits into the... He fits into just a general justified, like pattern, where, like, they give you a baddie each season that gets to be murdered at the end.
And they're like, every year they're like, remember, you might lust after him, but you love Boyd Crowder.
Yep.
Yeah.
While Boyd is just hanging off at the side. He's like, I'll be back next year, guys. Don't worry.
Yep.
But yeah. Boyd Holbrook, welcome to the crew. You've been inducted as an MVP for 2023.
Yeah. Does he get a red jacket? A red...
No. When somebody gets their second MVP, they get a jacket. They get the red jacket.
Okay.
Right? And they get to, like, just bomb into the podcast whenever they want and just be like, hey, I need to tell you how you're wrong. And I'm like, all right, cool. You're right. So we have to be careful about who we give that second one to.
Yeah.
But with that said, I think we finished all our categories and all we got left is our actual list of the quote-unquote best movies of 2023.
Sweetheart, why don't you head upstairs?
It's early.
Really?
30 minutes.
Now.
What if I have dessert and you guys order something to eat? Because I would love to hear more stuff.
She's a hell of a negotiator, even better than her old man. It was the first time in your life. Just say, yes, Dad. You know, you did a great job. She's very sweet. You are a tough man to track down, Raylan. Took me 3 whole tries to find the right hotel. Stand up. What, you gonna shoot an unarmed man? Did some digging about you, Raylan. Interesting story about you and a man on a rooftop in Miami.
And we're going to count this down from 10 to 1. So I'm going to ask Damien to start us off with number 10.
Number 10. We debated whether this movie came out in 2023. I was given the go ahead. This movie came out real early. We lost our minds when it came out. Everyone except Andrew. Andrew is no fun. He is devoid of fun. He thinks that's because not true. He has a child now, he's more mature than us. He's probably right, but we will not admit to it. Sisu is our number 10. What if John Wick, but Nazis and not John Wick? It is perfect. A perfect movie is what this is. Number 9. Mattel said, hey, Barbie? And then 14 question marks. And then someone said, you think Greta could do this? Damian said no, because he hates all her movies. Andrew and Douglas said yes.
I love Greta.
And Damian Greta was wrong. And Greta is great. she turned plastic toys into what felt like a full-on movement at some point. It got scary at a point where I was like, I think this is a comedy, but people are talking about this movie like it is telling the truth. And people need to hear the truth. And I got scared.
Come on, patriarchy.
I got scared.
Guys.
And then I watched it, and it is a comedy.
Guys, I still will never get over my man telling me how upset he was when he realized the patriarchy wasn't just about horses.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was
right? That movie is end-to-end incredibleness.
Gosling reminded everyone that he good in comedies.
Like, right.
His timing, impeccable. And we have passed new bylaws this year where by movies in the top 10 cannot show up in our surprise category, which is why Barbie is not in the surprise category, because it would have walked away with the victory. But Barbie is far and away the biggest surprise of the year, because
I remember the nervousness of like Barbie coming out, where like initially my brain is like, look, I love you, Greta. I love you, Ryan.
But this is a bridge.
I love you, Margot. But this is a bridge too far. And like as it's rolling up, I'm like, you know what? Maybe they got something here. Like maybe. And I went to watch that movie, and I think of this year, of like even, actually no, I don't think that's quite true. But I think it's close. Like looking at the movies in this list, I think that's the movie that I walked out just the generally happiest.
Mm-hmm.
Just like ear to ear grinning,
smiles
walking
on
out of that movie.
Yeah, this movie's great.
All right. Thanks, Douglas. Number 8, Jonathan Wickham is in his fourth and final movie.
Hey, I think they've made 3 more John Wick movies since this movie came.
Yes, they called it the Continental, but John Wick was not in it, so we do not care.
Is it now a genre? Is John Wick now a genre?
Let's pray that it isn't. I do not want this to happen. Much like how The Raid became a genre, that is not what I want. I want people to come with fresh ideas to a well-worn genre of ass-kicking, gun-shooting cowboy movies.
I need more people to take the John Wick approach, where they're like, we've run out of ideas, and someone in the back goes, I heard Donnie Yen's free. And then they just...
Yeah. Right. And take overt references from video games. Just have a top-down shooter in the middle of your movie, and it is the best thing I've ever seen.
Damian, this movie spent a half an hour throwing John Wick downstairs. Still, it was amazing.
Right. And then he got in a gunfight with a blind man, and the movie just... And by that point, you didn't even go, this movie's stupid, because that man can't see John Wick. This is nonsense. You were just along for the ride.
And then Clancy Brown shows up.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh,
every part of it. Every part of it, glorious. Is this movie good? Yes. Is it dumb? Yes. Is it bad? Probably. Do I care? Absolutely not. It is the fourth one. And when John Wick ends up shooting guns in space, then I will be happy. Until then,
keep making John Wick movies. let's not say that out loud, because the last time we said that about a film franchise, it eventually happened. Let's not will those things into existence.
Here's the thing. That film franchise started getting good with the fifth one, made 2 good ones, then a mediocre one, then an openly bad one, and now they're back. Fasten your seatbelts. Pretty good. Why? Jason Momoa is better than everyone. I didn't see it coming. He's glorious. Start to finish. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about number 7, the movie I've watched and none of you have. American Fiction. Jeffrey Wright, spectacular. Story, premise, everything, funny as all get out. But it is not slapstick. They were very reserved. And them being reserved only heightens the funny moments. Douglas will love this movie because everyone is monsters. Everybody's mean to everybody else. And then in the middle of it, you have Sterling K. Brown basically playing Morpheus.
All right, so I like Sterling K. Brown, but weirdly enough, the one character, the one role that in my mind every time you say his name that pops in is his one bit that he did on Brooklyn Nine-Nine as the dentist.
Yeah.
And that's what I see every time you say Sterling K. Brown.
You won't see that ever again after watching American Fiction. You will only see this character. It is very good. And I think this... I mean, I have a feeling that this movie is going to win some awards, but who knows? Who knows? Listen, it doesn't feel like Killers of the Flower Moon feels openly Oscar baity, but it's so good that you forgive it. This doesn't feel like that, which is why I get the feeling that it's going to win a lot of awards. But it's really good, so who cares? Number six, Andrew's love child, The Holdovers. Andrew Robinson.
I didn't know.
Tell us why you love The Holdovers.
I didn't think I'd ever come back to Alexander Payne. I thought I was done with him. But oh my goodness, this movie is incredible. It is comedy gold. It's a Christmas movie. It's a story of a prep school, a boarding school, where basically the one curmudgeonly teacher that everybody hates, played by Paul Giamatti, is forced to be the custodian of all of the students that no parent wants to take home for Christmas. So basically three students and him are stuck at school, and he's like, well, we're all going to study and hate each other. And the movie is just end-to-end ridiculousness. It is the kind of humor that I enjoy, where it is just natural. It is just like people being terrible and not knowing they're funny, but they are hysterical at being terrible to each other. And it feels, and it intentionally looks like it, feels like a movie from the 70s where they're just kind of hanging out in Christmas and shit's happening. And I love every minute of this movie. It's one of my favorite movies of the year, which is why it's on this list. And holy shit, you guys need to watch this movie.
Speaking of movies that you love every minute of, in 2016, Martin Scorsese made Silence, and I fell in love with him again. And then 3 years later, he betrayed me and made one of the worst movies I've ever seen in The Irishman. It is still playing. If you look behind you on any TV, The Irishman, it is still going. And as a way of apology, he has come back to us with Killers of the Flower Moon, which looks like Oscar bait.
I mean, I'll make one addendum to this movie. Let's cut out the end.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, he can't help himself. Yeah. But the movie on its as a whole is...
Yeah, incredible.
Very.
It is a crime-ass crime movie.
And with it is a
DiCaprio
story...
DiCaprio being such a moron. Yeah,
DiCaprio is reprising his role from Shutter Island. But it is a story and a subject matter that... has only in recent time become more widely explored. There is Reservation Dogs that tackles the Native American and some of the trials and tribulations that they've gone through. And this movie seeks to do the same, but not in a joke way, in a very serious way about what happens when racism and greed intersects, and how far will white people go to get all of the monies. And it didn't feel like when this movie came out, everyone talked about how long it was, which
it was quite long.
But
it is quite long.
But it didn't.
Once again,
that
he can't
way.
Help himself. He can't it help himself, but.
Right, but it didn't feel that long to me. And that is always a good sign of how good a movie is, where the time seems to pass quicker than it actually passes. There are movies that I've watched for 90 minutes that feel longer than this movie. And there's movies that just move along. But again, if you look at your TV beside you, The Irishman, continues to go. Speaking of things that
the one thing on this movie though, like the one thing I'd say, like, as you talk about the Native American aspect of it, like, I knew going in, like, that element of it, but I didn't know that this was a true story, meaning like it's a specific true story. Mm-hmm. Right. I thought it was like going to be like a general swath of like just amalgamating things together. And that kind of surprised me, like, when everything was said and done.
Like, monsters exist. Monsters. Yeah.
The movie I'm most excited for Douglas to watch.
You stepped on my segue, so now I have no way to transition to this movie. I was like, speaking of monsters, no, it doesn't work. Number four, Past Lives. Andrew, Douglas, cover your ears. Andrew, this is the best movie that came out last year. I will not. I will not admit this. And it cannot be the number one in the overall. And it is not my number one, but it is the best movie that came out last year.
I asked you, Damien. I tried to see if I could feel it out, but
Yes. Douglas is allowed back. Douglas, tell us about Past Lives. Oh, that's right. You didn't watch it. Andrew Robinson. How good is this movie?
It's so fucking good.
It's so good.
I mean, when Douglas eventually watches it, he'll tell me about how it's a ripoff of the Before movies, but go fuck himself.
Yeah, this movie is... No, and he's right, but who cares?
Is that what this is? I want to watch this movie now.
Yeah, but better, and it ends in tragedy, except not the type of tragedy that you think of. Celine Dion did a tremendous job. I can't believe
Celine it. Celine Song. Oh my God, dude.
How many famous Celines do you know from Canada? There's only the one. So nice try, dog.
I forgot for a minute they were both Canadian.
Yes.
She can't cast Past Lives is
Korean people, but it doesn't matter. I know Celine Dion when I see Celine Dion.
But yeah, Past Lives is incredible. I love every minute of it. It's one of the few movies I've seen more than once this year. Yeah. And I adore it. And Douglas, you need to watch this movie.
Again, I said this in our discussions when we were ordering this list. There are very few movies that feels nostalgic the first time you watch it. A Knight's Tale is one of those movies. Where the first time you see it, you're just like, I've seen this a million times, even though you've never seen it. You're just like, yeah, man, this movie is going to go a long way. This movie is A-okay. It is perfect. And that's what this movie feels like. It is weird. And when I got to the end of the movie, genuinely emotional at the end of this movie. And it should not happen like that. This movie, and again, Douglas, you can cover your ears. This movie feels genuine. It feels real. And I don't like that.
You don't feel like feelings?
Yeah, I don't like how much feelings I have for this movie. I do not appreciate it. I reserve my feelings for Chris Nolan movies when time passes and a man sees that his family has aged 20 years in 2 hours. That is where my emotions are for and nowhere else.
Well, we'll get to some of those feelings, I guess.
But Past Lives, damn it to hell. Speaking of many lives, number three, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Across the Spider-Verse.
Who cares?
Into is the first one.
Nobody cares.
I care. Because I wanted to say the right thing.
Across the Spider-Verse. Do you like Spider-Man's? Did you like the first ones? Did you like Spider-Pig? No.
All right, sure. I'll admit to that. I like Spider-Ham. I like Spider-Noir.
There's a Spider-Man that has a horse. The horse has a mask. Tremendous. There's a T-Rex Spider-Man.
Yeah. There's a Spider-Baby.
There's a Spider-Baby.
Mm-hmm.
There's a spider everything. And this movie.
There's a spider Oscar Isaac.
It is better than the first one, which is impossible. It is impossible that they made a better version of that first movie. Because that first movie came out of nowhere and was tremendous. And you're just like, well, they're going to make more of these. But it would be like How to Train Your Dragon. Where, yes, you'll get more and you'll enjoy it. But there's no way to make it better.
That would be a hell of a movie. How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Boy. Mm. But I don't know if we could bring the kids to that movie, though.
It's on Max. It's not a regular TV. You have to pay for a separate subscription. Across the Spider-Verse doesn't make any sense. It is too good. It is so much better than the first one that it makes me upset. Because it shouldn't be. They made a joke villain into a real villain. And they turned something that was only played for laughs in the first movie into something so dead serious. And the cliffhanger works, everything works, it is beautiful, it sounds great, it looks great, there's a Mumbatan, every part of this movie is the best.
It is Mumbatan's so good. I love Gwen Stacy's area where like she just see the claws. Right. Right. Like, listen.
It might not be the best movie, but it is the most movie. It is the most movie of 2023.
It's up there as like one of the most beautiful movies of the year. And I think that's my problem as we talk about constantly about like anime and live action shit, where like my brain is like, because it's animated, they can just do anything and they can make it like that. And it's incredible. You don't have the restrictions of people being like, how do I put this into a lens and make it do all these things? Right. And make people do a lot of hard work to make that happen and make it look a certain way. But there are also just general limitations. Like you can't make it be the brightest and the dimmest in the same frame like you can in animation.
Right.
And holy shit, Spider-Verse is incredible. And we've not even talked about the villain of the dot.
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah, he's a joke, and then they made it so good.
Like,
by the end. Oh.
I first encountered him in, like, a Daredevil comic, which he was, like, in three frames. It was just a joke of, like, a person. But you're like, how does this... And then just even the first initial fight of the dot, you're like, it's incredible.
Yep.
And Spider-Verse.
Yeah, it's incredible.
We've not even talked about how another Brooklyn Nine-Nine tie-in comes here of Andy Samberg being in this movie.
And Andrew, we could talk about Spider-Verse forever. It's too good. It's too good a movie. Very upsetting that it's not number one. But before we get to number one, number two, Chris Nolan made a movie about time and space. And it is also about a real person. It is also technically a biopic, and Douglas loves it, so I need an explanation.
Damian Christopher Nolan breaks all rules.
So this is not the Aviator?
This is not the Aviator. On the head. This movie, I am not supposed to like. It is a movie about a real person where they talk about the real boring things that they did. And I love this movie. A part of loving this movie is that somehow Nolan has figured out how to make this what could be a fairly boring and serious and monotonous biopic into a Chris Nolan-ass movie where he has, you know, 20 different things going at the same time. He has transitions of just... I don't even know what to call it. Colors, right? Bouncing around. Where, funnily enough, this is the first movie since Inception actually, not even since Inception, since the movie before Inception, that you can hear all the dialogue. No, not Inception, sorry. Since Inception.
That's not true.
Yes,
that's not true. Yeah. Kenneth Branagh's in this movie kind of mumbling a bit.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah. And I love that Kenneth Branagh is in this. Unfortunately,
he's not chewing as much scenery as Tenet, but
yeah, exactly. But he does a little bit of chewing. That accent, Andrew, is real fun. Unfortunately, Michael Caine put up his cane and is no longer acting, so he could not be in this movie. But I still think that Chris Nolan can pull him out of retirement for the next one, whatever that is. Maybe it's another Batman movie. I don't know. But this movie is so good. This movie, first of all, obviously, I mean, the actors are acting in particular. Stacked. In particular, a certain Peaky Blinder, Cillian Murphy, is finally getting his lead role in a Chris Nolan movie. Apparently, he says he'll do anything for Nolan, and finally, he's got his shine. He's getting to shine here. And the thing about this movie, and I don't know if I want to get too into it, because this now goes into the sort of stuff, the sort of things conceptually that I don't like generally like about biopics, but probably, I mean, this person that Nolan has decided to focus on, whether or not, I'm sure he's actually had, well, maybe not quite a boring life based on the movie, but, you know, most people's lives in general, sure, they might do one or two big things in their life, but generally, you know, it's not that special, right? And so you kind of have to overdo it. And a lot of that kind of weighs down a movie like this. But this guy in particular did something that, or at least oversaw something, that was equal parts, or maybe you might argue it's not equal parts, but definitely part great technical achievement and part
war crime?
All the negative words, right? World-ending horror of a future, right? And Nolan,
don't you love that moment where someone says out loud, like, I did some math and it says if we do this the whole world will blow up?
Oh. That's a real thing, by the way. Like, yes. I actually know that story from before. Mm-hmm. They did indeed think that there was a chance,
yes, that they could ignite the entire atmosphere and kill everybody.
I didn't know
everybody.
The specifics of it, but essentially a chance that it would end the world.
Yes, and it would kill everyone on Earth.
Yeah.
Yes, the reaction essentially would not stop and kill out. Right, it turns out wars
like,
provide
let's press
focus.
This button and figure out. Let's press this button and figure it out.
What's the worst that could happen? Everyone dies?
Yeah, but Nolan made this movie in such a compelling way. And it's, I don't know how you guys view it, but you are able to, you're definitely seeing most of this movie through our protagonist's eyes, which is Oppenheimer himself, I feel. No, you don't think so?
So I think one of the things he does interestingly is it kind of has two sides to it in my mind. And uh-huh. I feel like for the most part, you're watching it through Oppenheimer because that's he's the title card. He's a person. But there's also the Robert Downey Jr. side where I've, especially having seen this movie a few times, like I see that as a complete and utter foil to what Oppenheimer is doing. Basically the political side to the technical of what's happening in this film. And I find that as a fascinating way to view it. But more to the point, the thing I'll always love about this movie is about basically just all the other ancillary side characters in this story. And I think the one that stands out to me is always Emily Blunt. Right? No, we can talk about silly people all day long. I will talk to you about Alden Eldridge, I'll talk to you about Josh Hartnett, I'll talk to you about Matt Damon, in this movie, just chewing scenery. But Emily Blunt is incredible in this movie.
Pew, 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 pew.
I can't say her name anymore. You've ruined it. So you see, I tried to avoid us talking about her, and now you've done it again. But anyways, Emily Blunt. I will forever have the image of her now just standing up at the ceremony, just getting ready to spit at Benny Safdie. Right, where you could see the look on Safdie's face, where he's like, "I'm going to go and be friends." Wait, no, I'm not friends with her.
Yeah,
I need to go.
Yeah, that was a good scene. Is it weird, by the way? Was I the only person? I probably was, but I didn't realize it was Benny Safdie. I had to pause the movie halfway through and be like, "Who is this?" Because for some reason, I saw his face and I knew it wasn't him. But when I watched the movie and I kept seeing him, the name that kept coming to me, the face that I thought I was seeing was Armie Hammer's. Like, he looked a lot like Armie Hammer in this movie.
I can see. Now that you mention it, I can see.
Did this guy didn't get a job, did he? What? And then I saw it was Benny Safdie. I was like, okay, all right, cool.
So, yeah. Oppenheimer.
But yeah.
He made a Chris-ass Nolan biopic.
He really did. Yep. And I mean, I don't even know if somebody would say that this was a highly positive movie about Oppenheimer and his achievements, shall we call them. Because as you say, you very much feel like the villain is Robert Downey Jr. And while at least what's portrayed in the movie seems very shady, the question is who is the villain, right? Is Oppenheimer not in some way a villainous sort of I don't know, person in the grand scheme of things, given what his achievements were. And and you also see towards the end of the movie sort of a version of, and I didn't look this up, but I'm going to just assume all of it is generally true, some version of his, let us say, professional embarrassment, his falling out of grace, and then the cherry on the pie is that scene that you mentioned a while ago with Armie Hammer / Benny Safdie and Oppenheimer's wife, Emily Blunt. And that is something that I wonder about, but still, I, at the end of the day, enjoyed every second of my time with this movie. And I know somehow that this is a biopic that I will be watching multiple times.
Yes.
Is that something you expected in 2023 to say about a biopic?
It was not on my bingo card, no.
I have many varied thoughts about this entire period in history. The older I get, the more I lean to one side. And this movie, more than the BBC documentary that came before it, this movie really showed that the scientific community, once breakthroughs are made and made known, it is out of everyone's control. And if it wasn't him, it would have been someone else. And the thing that they made very clear to state in the movie is that we have to have this first, because there is another set of people working on this very problem. And if they have it first, it is not going to go well. Now, we have the benefit of hindsight. It turns out it didn't matter who made it first. It was not going to go well. And for a large part of my life, the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki was talked about as a swift end to a terrible war. And a couple years ago, a couple decades ago, because we're old, HBO commissioned a very long, extensive, and expensive documentary about what happened then and what happened since then. And it became very clear that, Oppenheimer may not have directly dropped the bombs. He may have not been in favor of dropping the bombs, all of those things. But he is responsible for creating a weapon that, without the miracle of the Earth reclaiming radiation at a rate that we didn't think possible, it devastated 100,000 people instantly, and there were repercussions for 4 decades after that. Listen, all props to Japan for recovering from that. I don't know if there's another country that could have. It is remarkable that they did. But, I read one of his memoirs, I guess his last one, I don't know, where he made a lot of analogs to the gentleman that made gunpowder, where he did not make it to do what they used it to do, and no one cared. This movie it's spectacular. Chris Nolan is not known for subtlety. That is not what his movies are about. And he made a biopic that was mired in nuance, and I think that is a triumph all its own. So, number two, Chris Nolan and Oppenheimer. And from subtlety and realism to the best damn movie of the year, Steve Netflix. It never happens. It can't happen. The last time something like this happened, me and Douglas took a firm stance to not like the movie. Andrew found a black and white masterpiece on the service, and Douglas and I, on principle, did not like the movie. And so Steve said, all right, we got Andrew a couple of years back. We have two monsters that we cannot win over. There has to be a way. Someone find me a way to win these two psychopaths over. And Joel Taylor, you are my new favorite director of all time. Listen to me. It is impossible that this movie is this good. Like we talked about this movie on the podcast. I'm not going to rehash it. Everything that you need to hear about this movie, we said in the podcast. And he's late. Andrew's tired. He has children. Douglas is on his fourth yawn of the podcast. It is time to wrap this up. All you need to know is that one truly perfect movie exists in 2023. Erykah Badu sings at the end of it.
Clown Tyrone. I love this movie to death.
Jamie Foxx.
Damian. They clearly told him, right? He came in and
it's perfect.
He probably read the script. He was all ready. He said, okay, I'm going to do this a certain way. And the director said, what? No. You're not going to pull that seriousness. I hired motherfucker Jones. I'm getting my motherfucker Jones.
Apologies. Motherfucker Jones is perfect in this movie. John Boyega is asked to do absolutely everything, and he does it perfectly. And oh my God, I'm blanking her on her name. I just had it in my
mind. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But she was great as well. I know exactly who you're talking about. And Damian, right. I mean, I am all I can think about right now is the three of them in an elevator singing songs, preparing themselves for battle.
It is as close to Black Dynamite 2 as we're going to get. And I genuinely think it exceeds Black Dynamite 2 because where Black Dynamite was not focused because it was taking all of the black exploitation genre and condensing it into one movie. The focus and care that is given to this movie is simply incredible. Like, I don't understand how we got this movie. I don't understand how Steve gave us this movie. None of it lines up. This movie should be impossible. It cannot exist. It should not exist. And it is perfect. I love every single... It is a movie that is above reproach. I will hear no negativity about this movie. I will tolerate none of it. Is Past Lives a better movie? Yes, but it doesn't matter. Is Oppenheimer better? Sure. Is Spider-Man better? Maybe. None of it matters. Because there's times when movies are made for people. And this movie is made for me and Douglas specifically. Andrew is along for the ride. Andrew would not pick this number one in any world. Is this movie's number? Andrew likes this movie. He probably loves this movie. But he does not feel the physical attachment because he's better than us. And that is fine.
I am. Yes. I'm glad you know.
And that is okay. I don't care though. Because the two lunatics that you do this podcast with will move heaven and earth to have one movie atop this list. And they cloned Tyrone. They cloned Tyrone.
I should have asked for one more pick.
It's perfect.
One more spot in the list. I should have stolen one more spot in the list.
We have concluded 2023. It is in the dustbin of history. It is still somehow the best year of the decade, which is horrendous.
I think I saw somewhere someone saying Despicable. That in 2023, mm-hmm. Hollywood released it 85 films, which is probably the lowest number that they've ever released.
And we need to get that down to about 50. Like, we don't need all these movies. We need four movies a month. That's 60? No, that's 48. Four times 12 is what? But is that how maths work? Who cares? We need 50 movies. Four movies a month. That's all Hollywood needs to give us.
It's wild. But yeah. It's surprising to me because, I mean, somehow it feels like a lot of movies came out, but also, like, I didn't think there were that many that were like, oh, I'm missing having this on my list.
True. You wouldn't, right? Because you still have the sheer numbers of it. And as Damian says, as much as historically we've got so many movies, at the end of the day, there is one winner every weekend, right? Which means... four movies a month. Yeah? All right?
Yeah.
I mean, there might be one and two and they go up and down, so maybe there's more than that, but those are the winners. Four movies a month.
Yeah, 50. Right. So 50 movies. And also, we get extra movies on Christmas.
Have to remember that for quite a while this year, there were some strikes that helped that along. So
yeah.
I'm sure next year we'll get that number back up.
I mean, Dune is coming this year, so.
Or this year, rather. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
you're saying it's Chamele's year to lose.
Mm-hmm. Timothée.
I mean, it is a clear front runner for. I mean, everything is competing against Dune.
Yeah. I was so upset.
Dune better come with it.
They pushed that because I was actually going to be in the States for that opening weekend.
I'm getting tired of your shit. You don't never buy me nothing. See, every time.